जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वाला गिरिवर डारी, पीजन वाला गिरिवर डारी, जय गोपी जन वाला गिरिवर डारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वाला गिरिवर डारी, गोपी जन वाला गिरिवर डारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Jagannatha Jaya Jagannatha Jaya Baladeva Jaya Subhadra Jaya Gauranita, Jaya Gauranita, Jaya Gauranita, Jaya Gauranita. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Gurudev 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 Gurudev
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotra Shatashi Shimar His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotra Shishi Maharaj in His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Premsika Hose Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shrimad Bhagavatam Grantharaja Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Guranga. Namo Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutare Shimate Giriraj Swami Niti Name. Namaste Bhaktivedanta Swami Deve Nama Sankirtana Prasarine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Samasta Vishtane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Namam Namas. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Mudirayet. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva. Pancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful story of the personality of Godhead, 10th canto, the Samam Bonam, chapter 1, the advent of Lord Krishna, introduction, text 57. Kiti mantam pratamajam. Kamsayana kadundubihi arpayam asakritrena sunritad ativihvalaha kirtimantam pratamajam kamsayana kadundubihi arpayam asakritrena sunritad ativivalha kirtimantam pratamajam kamsayana kadundubihi arpayam asakritrena sunritad ativihvalha. Kirti mantam pratamajam. Kamsayanat kurumbidhi. Arpayam asakritrena. Sonritad ativivalha kirti mantam pratamajam kamsayana kadundubihi arpayama sakritrena sonritad ativivalha kirti mantam pratamajam kamsayana kadundubihi arpayama sakritsena sonritad ativivalaha kirti mantam pratamajam kamsayana kadundubihi arpayama sakritsena sonritad ativivalaha kirti mantam pratamajam kamsayana kadundubihi arpayama sakritsena Sonrita dati vivalaha. Kirtimantam. By the name Kirtiman. Pratamajam. The firstborn baby. Kamsaya. Anta Kamsa. Anakadundubihi. Vasudeva. Arpayam asa, delivered, Krishna, with great pain, saha, he, Vasudeva, anritat, from the breaking of the promise, or from fear of being a liar, ativifalaha, was very much disturbed, being afraid. Translation. Vasudeva was very much disturbed by fear of becoming a liar by breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son, named Kirtiman, into the hands of Kamsa. So, please repeat. Vasudeva was very much disturbed by fear of becoming a liar by breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son, named Kirtiman, into the hands of Kamsa. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Vedic system, as soon as a child is born, especially a male child, the father calls for learned brahmanas, and according to the description of the child's horoscope, the child is immediately given a name. This ceremony is called namakarana. There are 10 different samskaras, or reformatory methods, adopted in the system of varnashrama dharma, and the name-giving ceremony is one of them. Although Vasudeva's first son was to be delivered into the hands of Kamsa, the namakarana ceremony was performed, and thus the child was named Kirtiman. Such names are given immediately after birth. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, who with the torchlight of knowledge opened my darkened eyes, which were blinded by the darkness of ignorance. First of all, I want to thank whoever puts these classes on the internet for doing it, because it allows me an opportunity across Lake Michigan to associate with all you wonderful devotees here and listen to your enlightening classes. And so I've been following this story, and some nice comments by Keshava Kishore Prabhu about Mother Devaki not complaining about her husband promising to give all her children to Kamsa to kill. But it brought to mind a story about the Jews being persecuted in Germany. And they had to hide. Many of them hid out. And some of them had young babies. And the Nazis would come looking for them, door by door, village by village, and they would have to hide out. And there's one story when one mother, because the child was starting to cry, she had to smother her baby. Otherwise, they would have all been discovered and killed. So for the purpose of survival, sometimes this is necessary. Sometimes to save a family, you sacrifice the child. To save a village, you sacrifice a family to save country, you sacrifice a village. So sometimes this is necessary. And so there's a nice verse in Shishupanishad, verse 11. It says, I'm trying to learn it, so bear with me. Vijam cha vijam chayas tad vidobayam saha avijam avijayam ritum avijayam ritum tirtva, thank you. Vijayam amritam ashnute, thank you, enjoys. So what this verse says is in order to, one must learn the process of nescience and the process of transcendental knowledge side by side in order to become, to transcend the cycle of repeated births and death and to enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So this is something I want to explore now. We have nescience and transcendence. So the nescience part is Kamsa, fearing for his life, wanting to preserve his own life, and for that he's willing to sacrifice the nephews of his the children of his niece or sister, half-sister. And on the other hand, we have Vasudeva and Devaki, their mother, husband and wife, but they're not ordinary living entities, not an ordinary couple. They're very exalted souls that will serve as parents for Lord Krishna to appear. In the Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, Krishna says, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chaktva deham punar janma naiti mam meti sorjana. Whoever knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities in this world, when he quits his body, he no longer has to take birth again in this material world, but he attains to my abode, Krishna says. So this is a very simple method to get out of this material world. Very simple, but one has to hear from the proper sources in order to get this knowledge, this understanding of Krishna's transcendental nature, that he is not a product of material nature, but that he comes just as a warden or a president, a governor of the state may come to the prison house for a visit to inspect and maybe to grant his mercy upon some of the inmates. He's not a member. Even though he's in the prison house, he's free to go at any time. And he's free to do whatever he wants in the prison house. The other inmates don't enjoy that freedom. So by understanding the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance into this material world, we can also come to that level of freedom and get out of the prison house of the material life, a material world. Back to nescience. The eighth son of Devaki was predicted to be the killer of Kamsa. Now, six of the sons were demigods that were cursed. They were sons of Marichi that were cursed to take birth and be killed by, I'm not sure of the whole story, but anyway, these are demigods that are appearing. And so when later on in the chapter and then next chapter too, when Kamsa sees that Vasudeva is willing to give up his son and to keep his promise to bring all his sons, then he becomes compassionate upon Vasudev and allows him to keep his son. He doesn't kill the son because he understands that, well, it's not the first son that's going to kill me, it's the eighth son. Later on, Narada Muni, who's impatient to have the Lord appear, so he's being a little bit mischievous, he tells Kamsa, well, you know, in your previous life as Kalanemi, you were killed by Vishnu, and Vishnu is in support of all the demigods. And now the demigods are taking birth all over in the Yadu dynasty and all that. So you should not spare any of the demigods. Anybody that's taking birth, you should kill them because they are the demigods, and the demigods are your enemies. So Kamsa, being great Asura or demon, took Narada Muni's advice and then decided to go ahead and kill the babies. So this is it shows the nature of those who are demoniac, because they're willing to do anything to advance their own cause and protect their own interests. They're willing to do anything, kill their family. And we've seen this many times in this age of Kali. The Italian dynasty, they were poisoning each other just to get ahead. Anyway, can't remember. So we see this a lot. So lost my pace here. So Devaki and Vasudev, they are not ordinary living entities. They are pure devotees who are participating in the lila, or the pastimes, of Lord Shri Krishna. And Devaki gave birth actually to six children, the six sons of Marichi that were destined to be killed by the curse of the Brahman. Now, a few of you here are brahmacharis, some grihastas. I want to describe another aspect of nescience in this material world that pertains to giving birth. Because I'm visualizing Devaki, you don't, it may be in the heavenly planets you give birth right away, but in this planet it takes 9 months according to Western calculation, 10 months according to Vedic calculation. And it's a lot of trouble. I've had two children. I've been the father of two children, and the mother had to go through all the difficulties. You know, the father has to go through very little difficulties other than maintaining the mother. When a woman first becomes pregnant, one of the first symptoms is morning sickness. You have a woman has bouts of nausea and ends up throwing up. Then as the pregnancy progresses, there's all kinds of hormonal changes that take place, and which produce rashes and on the skin, and sometimes acne on the face, and which is, you know, when you, for a woman, for her face to become, to lose its beauty, is pretty much like dying. You know, you're losing your beauty. There's a verse here that I like to recite every day. Rama rameti rameti rame rame manorame sahasranama bistulyam rama nama varanane. So this is Lord Shiva addressing his wife Durga. It says, I chant the holy name of Rama, Rama, Rama. Oh, Varanana. Varanana means, oh, you with the most beautiful face. And he's talking, so he's glorifying his wife by this name, Varanana. Vara means the best. And Anana means face. So you who have the most beautiful face. So for a woman, it's very important. You put cosmetics on. But then when you get pregnant, all these hormonal changes start taking place and mood changes. Another thing, another symptom is intense craving for strange foods, pickles and ice cream together, you know. And it's just the body, it's needing particular nutrients to be able to produce this other living entity in the womb of the mother. And then, as the child grows, he's taking up room inside the body of the mother, and it's displacing all these other organs and causing pressure here and there, and you know, you end up having to go to the bathroom every 30 minutes because your bladder is just reduced to the size of a... So, these are all the troubles of giving birth, you know. It's not just the embryo in the womb, as is described in the Bhagavatam, is having to suffer from all these inconvenient positions and worms biting it and the pus and urine and so on. But the mother also has to go through all these problems. And then at the last moment, there's the pain of labor. That may go on for hours, and perhaps for days for some. Now, my mother, it took me 10 months. I didn't want to come out. I was due on December 31st, 1951, but I didn't come out till January 31st, 1951, and they were wondering, when is he going to come out? And then finally I came out. So the same story happened with Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mata, they were wanting a child, and 10 months it was due. 11 months, still not there. 12 months, 13 months. Lord Chaitanya was in the womb for 13 months. And finally they consulted with Nilambar Chakravarti, who was an astrologer, and he said, well, the child is waiting for the auspicious moment of the lunar eclipse. And that's what happened. But I can imagine that, all right, after 9 months in the womb, the mother's ready to deliver, no matter what. Let's get this done with. But then 10 months goes on, and it's like... And then, so finally, there's the delivery of the child, the birth of the child. Well, I forgot to mention that because the body is distended so much, when the child is delivered, all these stretch marks appear on the skin of the mother, which is a great source of concern also for the mother. That all these stretch marks on all over the belly and everything. So. And they don't go away. And then even after the delivery, there's what's called postpartum depression. So the mother often feels depression. It's unexplained, but it's... So in the womb, the mother's there. I mean, the child is there in the womb, and he's kicking, moving around, and it's a source of pleasure. And this goes on, and Devaki has to do this 6 times, and each one of these children is, of her children, is taken away and killed right after it's born, as exemplified here by Kirtiman. I wonder if anybody names their child Kirtiman. Probably not. But it's a nice name, Kirtiman. So these 6 children were 6 years, 6 consecutive years, to go through the pains of giving or creating a body within your womb, and going through all these different difficult transformations, 1 year after another, and after another, and then. All your children are taken away. It's like nothing but hellish life, difficulty. And then the 7th birth is Lord Ananta took residence in the womb of Devaki. So he's the 7th son, but he didn't appear in the regular way. He was transferred into the womb of Rohini. And then the eighth son was Lord Krishna, and we know the story of his appearance. We should know the story of his transcendental appearance. Because as Lord Krishna indicates, by understanding the nature of his appearance and activities in this world, we will not have to take birth again in this material world. So Lord Krishna's appearance is not the way it was with his previous 6 brothers. His appearance is completely transcendental, and he manifested it in his birth as in a Vishnu form with 4 arms, very beautiful. And then just to show that to Devaki and Vasudeva, his pure devotees, that he had fulfilled their wish to have a son like Vishnu. So if there's any discussion, we still have about 15, 16 minutes we can discuss, or we can... So the verse is, Kirti mantam prata majan kamsayana kadundubihi arpayama sakrishena sonritad ativa vivalaha. Vasudeva was very much disturbed by fear of becoming a liar by breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son named Kirtiman into the hands of Kamsa. Now, so he discussed about Devaki. But now let's analyze Vasudeva's position. That he gave his word to Kamsa. And he considered this principle of truthfulness more important than the life of his firstborn son. More important than the life of his firstborn son. And so this is an example. This is a great soul, pure devotee, is showing by example that truthfulness is paramount importance, more important than life itself. And in Kali Yuga, there's 4 principles of religious principles, you know. And truthfulness is one of those. But in Kali Yuga, the truthfulness is, let's see. What are the 4 principles of religion? cleanliness, truthfulness, austerity, which I don't have, mercy, which I don't have too. That's why I don't remember them. Mercy, austerity, cleanliness, and truthfulness. And I believe the only one that's left in this age is truthfulness. Is that correct? Thank you. I'm trying to be truthful. So anyway, if there's any discussion, we can. Keshava.
Just before passing the microphones, there's a humble request to the devotees. Please keep your comments and questions concise. So if there is more for everybody, so just keep that in mind, please. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the class. This pastime reminds me a little bit of what Joseph and Mary in the Christian tradition endured, you know, because when King Herod knew about Jesus was born, he killed all the kids because he didn't know who was the kid.
Yeah, Herod was the Kamsa of the religious, of the Jewish tradition.
Here, in this pastime, in this particular story, all the elements are much more dramatic because it's directly, he knows this genocide, this demon knows exactly where the source of his death is coming from. So, and again, the mother delivering, as you said, during 9 months for 7 times, enduring all these bodily changes, and then delivering to this demon to sacrifice his kids. It's just appalling. That's all what I wanted to say.
So I have a question for Mother Krishna Rarchana. Since in your classes you were quoting all these Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries. And where do you get these from?
It's a book entitled Sarpana Darshini. Sarpana Darshini. It's a book that is his commentary on the Bhagavatam.
Oh,
and okay. It was purchased in Vrindavan.
Oh, okay. That was very nice. And I appreciate your comments when you bring this up. Vishwanath Chakravarti is one of the main commentators that Prabhupada relied on. And he had made great regard for Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And of course, he deserved it. He is a great, great, great personality in our line. Lochan Prabhu.
Thank you for the class, Prabhu. My question is that did Vasudev and Devaki, did they know that that everything was prearranged by Krishna? Did they know that?
Did Vasudev and Devaki know that everything was prearranged by Krishna?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't answer that. I don't know. I don't think so, but anybody else know? I don't think they know it was prearranged.
There was one verse before that says when Vasudeva was considering the situation and he was thinking how to deal with cancer, he understood that it's predestined that he was going to be killed by his son. So he was thinking to himself that all these different possibilities,
right.
And one of them was that it's already predestined that my sons are going to kill him, so he just buying time because he's going to be killed. So he's sort of
yeah So in one sense, because this voice, the unembodied voice coming down from the heavens, it announced that the eighth son of Devaki would kill Kamsa, from that Vasudeva understood that at least one of his sons was going to survive. Yes, Prabhu, what's your name? Brahma Haridas?
Prana Haridas.
Prana Haridas, thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for class, Prabhu. I was thinking how, you know, Vasudeva is going through a great difficulty in this verse. And, you know, it looks like he's suffering with great difficulty. He's delivering Ati Vivalas, what, great remorse or something. So, you know, in spiritual life, sometimes there's this conception or misconception that things will just be all peaceful and blissful and happy. Now, of course, we see in like when we hear about, like, you know, service and separation, there's great distress, but it's described as the greatest ecstasy. Here, it seems like, you know, it's just distress. You know, Vasudeva's sons are just having to be killed. As you described, Devaki's having these child, going through the whole childbirth six times, and then they're just being killed. So, I'm just curious about, you know, the realization that I haven't realized, but what I'm contemplating recently is just how spiritual life is not that. That's a misconception that things will just be peaceful and happy. More like when one surrenders to Krishna, it's like a different substance. So I'm wondering if that's true. And if that is true, then how does one come to this concept? Well, how does one accept it? Because as a conditioned soul, as myself, you know, there's just this desire for, you know, it's almost like the desire, it's like a karmi and jnani desire. I want enjoyment, but if I can't get that, I'll just want, like, peace. But surrendering to Krishna includes variegated emotions, so.
The question I'm understanding is that we have many, many times the misconception that coming to spiritual life is one of achieving peace and everything's going to go smooth and there's not going to be any difficulties. And so how to reconcile that this doesn't happen? Is that what you're asking?
Well, it's kind of a two-part question. Is that the right conception, that surrendering to Krishna is not going to necessarily make your material life perfect? And then secondly, how does one, like, practically stomach this? Like, how does one move the consciousness towards the proper conception of what surrendering to Krishna and devotional service actually is?
Yeah. So, to expect smooth sailing in the material life is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. To expect smooth sailing in spiritual life, that can happen. So we have to disassociate ourselves from spiritual life, from material life, to spiritual life by surrendering to Krishna and his representative and everything related to Krishna. So one of the hardest times I had in my life, if I can make it a personal thing, was going through a divorce about 25 years ago. And it was a very difficult thing. It went on for 2 years. It was not quite 6 years like Devaki had to go through, but it was hellish, hellish time. And I was trying to protect my children. Because if my children went with my wife, my ex-wife, I had a vision that my son would die from a drug overdose and my daughter would be pregnant at 16. Not the worst thing in the world, it happens all the time nowadays, but of course, my son dying, that was terrible. So I had this parental urge to protect my children in it. And I went through this 2 years of agony. But the only way I managed to do it, come out of it, was by intensely praying to Krishna and surrendering for his support. It was actually very purifying. It was very purifying. And I've never gone through anything that difficult before, since then. And it has helped me to see that I'm not in control. I'm not the controller here. You know, Krishna's the controller. And by the grace of Krishna, I was able to come out successfully according to my plans for protecting my children. I was able to protect them or give them the loving kind of environment that as much as I could for them. So we all have to face our own difficulties in the material world. We'll have our own attachments, our own fears, our own desires and hankerings that ultimately have to be given up. Even our own desires for, you know, our bodies, we're not our bodies. This is an envelope, a covering of our, a temporary covering of our soul. And we identify with the body simply because we're covered with false ego. But when we get through to this, you know, be able to dissolve or penetrate through the false ego to who we really are, the servants of Krishna, and act in that capacity, then actually we find peace. Then we can find peace. But as long as we're acting on the mental platform or the false ego platform or the bodily platform, there's not going to be any peace. You know, we just have to go all the way through to our spiritual essence and engage ourselves as eternal servants of Krishna, occupy ourselves in that way, in the service of pure devotees, and that's, you know, even that may not be peaceful all the time, because we have to, as long as we're not pure, we're going to be put to the test, put it that way.
Thank you, Hu. I just gonna comment one thing on his question.
Yes, please do.
In an upcoming verse, Srila Prabhupada makes an interesting comment. This is the purport to text 59. When Vasudeva had to actually present the child because of his truthfulness, Kamsa was pleased. Prabhupada says in the purport, the word samatvam is very significant in this verse. Samatvam refers to one who is always equipoised, unaffected by either happiness or distress. Vasudeva was so steadily equipoised that he did not seem in the least agitated when delivering his firstborn child into the hands of Kamsa to be killed. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Dukesh anudvigna manasukeshu vigatasbriha. And then he quotes, Matra sparshas tukonteya shitosna sukadukada. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception. One must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. His point is that the devotee, even though there is this unpredictable, wild variety of experiences in material life, for the yogi, his training is how to be equipoised in either. So he's neither elated in material happiness or disturbed in material distress, which indicates that he's accessing a deeper essence of himself. Hmm. So spiritual life, on one hand, real spiritual life, it is always blissful, always joyful. That's the nature of the soul, Anandamaya Vyasat. This, and Krishna says, Susukam Kartamavyam, this path is joyfully performed. So bhakti is always joyful, actually. We're in the stage of sadhana, which means that we're trying to come to that platform. But once anartas, you know, a significant percentage or portion of anartas go from the heart and on the stage of nishta, then one can experience, even in that duality, we see great devotees, they're still fixed, they're still feeling ananda, even in amidst the greatest difficulty. Among so many, we can hardly imagine how many challenges devotees have to go through. So our job is to continue endeavoring with great determination, and coming over those hurdles, it will come to that stage wherein, good or bad, heat or cold, the devotee can feel that joy of the soul.
Yeah, thank you for that comment. So Vasudev, you're describing, Prabhupada is describing as equipoised. And we can understand that Devaki also was equipoised, because she's also a great soul on the same level as Vasudev. And even though she's going through all these difficulties to give birth, she's equipoised. You know, she says, I'm not this body, and you know, it's the material energy, the waves of the material energy, they're going and coming, and under the control of providence, right? And so Vasudeva is equipoised, but we can understand Devaki, because she's on the same platform. She's also equipoised. And then, so they're, and I'm sure they help each other, you know. They're good couples, they help each other out. So, last but not least.
Hare Krishna, bro. I emailed you, you never emailed me back, but we'll talk about that afterwards. Maybe one of your spam, but I really appreciate your all your classes and your honesty, especially. You were talking about truthfulness. And the one thing you remind me to keep in mind is we don't know what difficulties devotees go through. Because from your face, you look always peaceful and transcendental, and that's one of the most you know, horrible experiences. That's why one thing to keep in mind is that when devotees come in for association with Bhagavatam, Prasadam, you never know what difficulties they go through. So to criticize devotees, oh, you're talking too much, or you know, you should be more respectful. You don't know what difficulties people go through. So that's one thing I keep in mind when I'm associating with people. Our life isn't just Krishna consciousness. It's you know, trying to see from this perspective, everyone has difficulties, so we should have a broad mind and not just a external, you know, that's what spiritual life is, not seeing externally always, you know. So that's one thing I appreciate. But my question is regarding one comment I appreciated. You were mentioning that you were in the womb longer than you should have been. And we hear pastimes, Lord Chaitanya, you mentioned, and also Shukadev Goswami was in the womb 16 years. Well, there's a quote I heard that says, labor pains are a sign that a mother is about to give birth to a miracle. In much the same way, difficulties in our life are a sign that we're gonna give birth to the seed of greatness that God has planted within our soul. And regarding what Keshava Kishore Prabhu was mentioning about Jesus had a similar circumstances before he was born. The Virgin Mary, her husband was Joseph, and she had a very difficult, so she came to her husband and said, you know, she told her husband that, please don't jump to conclusions, but I'm pregnant and it's not your baby. And it was an angel appeared to me and, you know, impregnated me with the seed of God. So Joseph, he was like, oh, so an angel appeared to you and impregnated you. So then he essentially said, I'm going to go find me an angel too, a Victoria's Secret model. So he was going to leave her, but then an angel appeared to him in his dream and said, actually, you know, what she's saying is true. So that was kind of, I'm going to his direction of truthfulness. You know, a lot of times when we speak the truth, we may jump to conclusions, never know when other people speak the truth. In the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, volume 1, there's a chapter called Transcendental Morality. And in that chapter, Bhaktisiddhanta told one of his disciples, his disciples told him, my dear Bhaktisiddhanta, I can't stay during this festival. I have to leave for work. So then Bhaktisiddhanta told the disciple, just lie to your boss and stay for the festival. So then a lawyer was there, you know, experiencing the festival. So he became so infuriated by Bhaktisiddhanta, who's supposed to be an embodiment of truth, that he left and was probably never going to come back again. So one of Bhaktisiddhanta's disciple went to this lawyer's house and explained the circumstance to him. He says, if your wife and children are in danger and you hide them in your house because some dacoits come to rob you, if the dacoits say, is there anyone else in this house? And he said, the person will definitely be duplicitous, untruthful, but that untruthfulness is for the higher purpose. So basically he was convinced of this argument. And so my question really is essentially how we could develop this mercy, this compassion, not jumping to conclusions, always thinking we're the guardians of truth, and always seeing externally, not being merciful to devotees. You know, we don't know what circumstances they go through. And maybe you could explain a little bit how we could develop this humility, this compassion, and stop jumping to conclusions.
How to develop humility, compassion, mercy. Truthfulness. That's what the whole process of Krishna consciousness is about. And there's 26 qualities of a pure devotee, which include those and many more. But the essential one is that one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One is a surrendered soul. And then the Lord takes care of his surrendered souls, and everything develops from there. So one should maintain, you know, an attitude of surrender, that I'm not the controller. This is not mine. You know, I and mine, you know, they're the disease of the soul. To think of oneself as being greater than somebody else. There's a nice verse that I like. It's the guiding principle that I follow in life. It's very simple. It was spoken by Swayambhuva Manu to Dhruva Maharaj, and I've quoted this before. Is that Titikshaya Karunaya Maitya Chakila Jantusu Samatvena Chasarvatma Bhagavan Samprasidati. The Supreme Lord is very pleased when he sees his devotee greet others with tolerance, compassion, friendliness, and equality. These four qualities there. So it's not a difficult thing to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as devotees, that's what is our business. Our business is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? This is what we engage in devotional service for. The ultimate goal of devotional service is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is a very simple way to please it. You just be tolerant. You be compassionate. You be friendly, and you treat them as equals. You know, not that I'm better. Actually, one should think of them as being an inferior. It's better. Take the humble position, as Lord Chaitanya says. And then the other qualities naturally develop as time goes on. You know. You just have to be tolerant, merciful, friendly, and treat others as our equals. Because ultimately on the spiritual platform, you know, we're all spirit souls, parts and parcels of Krishna. And we have to develop this vision that we're all spirit souls. We're not these bodies. That we're in eternal service. And then help each other to, you know, fan the spark of devotional service within each one of us. Not just devotees within the temple, but outside the temple too. Somehow or other we have, as a movement, Prabhupada's mission statement for ISKCON is to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge through society at large. and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of life, of values in life, and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. So this is our mission as ISKCON mission. Now, how are we going to do that? You know, by being tolerant, compassionate, merciful, friendly, and treating others as equal, as spirit souls. So that's what I do. It seems to work for me. And I share that with you. So thank you very much. Thank you for your audience. Srimad Bhagavatam Grantara Jaki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.